Today, the U.S. Supreme Court heard the first constitutional challenge to so-called Megan's Laws. These laws require convicted sex offenders who have completed their sentences to register their names, addresses, and current photos for dissemination to the public on the Internet. All 50 states adopted various forms of the statutes following the 1994 rape and murder of 7-year-old Megan Kanka by a twice-convicted sex offender. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The two laws before the court today from Alaska and Connecticut were struck down because the lower courts found that they imposed punishment retroactively and that they stigmatized individuals as a class without giving them a chance to prove individually that they're not dangerous. On the steps of the High Court today, Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal said that under his state's law, no one is improperly stigmatized.
The stigma comes from the conviction. And the conviction follows a trial, a full panoply of due process rights that establishes guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
But Shelley Sadin, representing those challenging the law, contended that it brands both those who were dangerous and those who were not.
The problem with this law is that it includes such a broad range of people, many of whom are not dangerous and none of whom have any opportunity to show that they don't belong posted with their current addresses and photographs beneath the label registered sex offender.
Inside the courtroom, Alaska's law came under scrutiny first. Like most Megan's laws, it requires regular registration even for people convicted before the law was enacted. Those challenging the law claim that this is a clear violation of the Constitution's ban on retroactive punishment. But lawyer John Roberts, representing Alaska, argued that the sex offender registration law is not a punishment, but a regulation to protect the public safety. Justice Kennedy was skeptical. This is a very, very burdensome regime. Justice Ginsburg, why isn't having your face plastered all over the Internet the modern-day equivalent of the public square shaming? Answer, the difference is that here the purpose is to inform the public. Justice Breyer, suppose the police could list anyone they're suspicious of. What's the difference? Answer, the difference is that here the legislature had a good basis for suspicion. Siding with the states was the Bush administration's Solicitor General, Ted Olson. Justice O'Connor asked him, you say that citizens have access to this information anyway. Doesn't this amount to the state getting a big megaphone? Justice Ginsburg, it often means that the individual cannot get a job or a place to live. Answer, this is the least intrusive way of informing the public. Justice Souter, normally a penalty is a one-time event. What this does is impose a status of shame for life. This is something very new. Lawyer Daryl Thompson, representing past sex offenders in Alaska, agreed. One of his clients, he told the court, was considered so undangerous that a family court judge had awarded him custody of his daughter in a dispute with the mother. Justice O'Connor, what about someone who is truly dangerous, who poses a risk to children? Answer, under this law, there is no attempt to weed out the dangerous ones. Justice Scalia, where is it written you can only warn people about those you are sure are dangerous? Justice Ginsburg, after all, if you make a mistake about a pickpocket, someone's out a little change. But if you make a mistake here, the consequences are very grave. But Shelley Sadin, the lawyer representing the past sex offenders in Connecticut, countered that many people on the list could, if given a chance, prove that they don't belong there. Justice Breyer, but even if your clients are not dangerous, they were convicted of sex crimes. Answer, this is not just a system of government name-calling. The individual gives up his liberty, can be sent to jail if he doesn't register, if he doesn't provide a new photo of himself when he shaves off a beard or gets fat. He can even be sent to jail if he travels to another state for a visit without notifying authorities. Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal responded that every person on the sex offender list is more likely to be dangerous than average offenders convicted of other crimes. Justice Souter, wouldn't you agree there are some subclasses of sex offenders who are not dangerous? For example, a 19-year-old boy who has intercourse with a consenting 14-year-old girl? After dodging for a while, Blumenthal admitted some on the sex offender list are not dangerous and have no way to unlist themselves. Justice Souter, they have no way out. Perhaps, but whether that means the law is unconstitutional remains to be seen. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.